Today is Monday, November the 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a major new phase of the Democratic-led impeachment inquiry begins this week, much to the president's chagrin.
They shouldn't be having public hearings. This is a hoax. This is just like the Russian witch hunt.
A controversial world leader visits the White House this week. Also ahead, Lady Gaga opens up about her own struggles with fitting in and what is now more important to her than providing shock value. It's all on today's International Edition. House Democrats launch a new phase in the impeachment investigation into U.S. President Donald Trump this week with a round of public testimony from current and former administration officials. Those witnesses will provide a detailed picture of Trump's alleged invitation of foreign interference into the 2020 presidential election. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, newly released transcripts from the closed-door testimony preview what could be a pivotal week in the Trump presidency.
Weeks of witness testimony behind closed doors on Capitol Hill, now public.
The essence of what the president communicates.
House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff leading the open hearings Democrats hope will show the American people the reasons to impeach President Trump.
I've got to come over and see the fake news.
First to testify, one of the Democrats' key witnesses, Ambassador William Taylor.
Someone who is, I think, performing another vital service for the country relating the facts that came to his attention, the very disturbing facts that came to his attention.
The top U.S. diplomat to Ukraine told House lawmakers it was clear U.S. security assistance to Ukraine was tied to that country's cooperation in an investigation into Trump's political rival Joe Biden and his family.
He's indicted himself by his own statements.
Also testifying next week, State Department official George Kent and former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, who have already told lawmakers of efforts to subvert traditional U.S. foreign policy channels in favor of Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer. Republicans focused on defending the substance of Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian president at the heart of the impeachment investigation.
I trust the call. I trust President Zelensky and President Trump, and I trust the fact that the Ukrainians didn't know that aid had been held and Ukrainians did nothing to get it released when it was released. Those are the fundamental facts, but we got all this other noise that Mr. Schiff wants to stir up that isn't fundamentally critical to what actually took place.
Trump calls the House impeachment process unfair.
Well, they shouldn't be having public hearings. This is a hoax. This is just like the Russian witch hunt.
House Democrats are following a similar process used in the impeachments of Presidents Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton.
The impeachment process at this point in time is like a grand jury process. What they're doing now is they're just gathering evidence. They're going to make charges. And obviously, House Republicans will have a chance to rebut the charges.
Those charges, known as articles of impeachment, would almost certainly pass the Democratic-controlled U.S. House. But the resulting trial in the Republican-majority U.S. Senate would likely not be successful, keeping Trump in office through the upcoming 2020 election. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
President Donald Trump is preparing to welcome Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to the White House Wednesday, just weeks after Turkey launched an assault in Syria on Kurdish fighters, longtime allies of the United States, in the fight against the Islamic State terrorists. U.S. lawmakers from both major parties have slammed the president for his announcement to withdraw most U.S. troops from Syria, and Democratic lawmakers are also blasting Trump's invitation to Erdogan as Turkey continues its attacks on the Kurds. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain files this report from the State Department.
Turkey's assault on Kurdish forces in northern Syria has outraged many members of Congress, who are calling for the U.S. to impose economic sanctions on Turkey to send a strong signal. Senator Chris Van Hollen spoke to VOA's Turkish service.
So we're continuing to push for economic sanctions, which would take effect so long as the Erdogan government is attacking our allies in the fight against ISIS, the Syrian Democratic Forces.
Amid concern over IS, another senator asked President Donald Trump to tell Congress how he will make sure that the Islamic State group is not revived in Syria after the withdrawal of U.S. troops. Senator Chuck Schumer also made clear he is not happy about Trump's invitation to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
Frankly, it's confounding that President Trump is rolling out the welcome mat to an autocrat whose recent actions have threatened our allies, our partners.
Trump sent a letter to Erdogan on the day the Turkish offensive started last month, saying, "Don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool." Erdogan slammed the letter as disrespectful, and a White House visit seemed uncertain. But experts say amid the storm of criticism at home and abroad over potential war crimes in Syria, both President Trump and President Erdogan hope to reaffirm the longstanding close ties between the U.S. and Turkey, NATO allies.
President Erdogan looks at the landscape in the United States, and he really only sees one friend in the whole country. But luckily for him, it's a pretty important friend. It's the President of the United States. Trump sees a leader in Turkey with whom he feels compatible for whatever reason, whether it's because they have a similar outlook on life.
Makovsky told VOA, despite the letter, Trump seems to admire Erdogan's toughness and to want to work with him. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
President Trump said Saturday the trade talks with China were moving along, quote, very nicely, but the United States would only make a deal with Beijing if it was the right deal for America. Trump told reporters that the talks had moved more slowly than he would have liked, but China wants a deal more than he does. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Barry Naughton, chair of the Chinese International Affairs at the Graduate School of International Relations and Pacific Studies at the University of California, San Diego, about how likely a trade deal could be.
There are all kinds of leads on this thing. I had Trump yesterday saying that the talks are going on, but much slower than he'd like. And we can say, you know, what do you think is going on? You got the close of the China Import Expo on, earlier today. Where do you think the lead on this thing is?
Well, I think, to me, the most important thing right now is that the intense bargaining going on right now about whether the U.S. will remove some existing tariffs strikes me as a sign that the two sides are actually pretty close to coming to an agreement on this limited phase one agreement. Of course, it's very hard to tell because we've been getting contradictory information. We get statements, just from the Trump administration, we get completely contradictory statements from different spokespersons from one day to the next.
You think there's a battle going on in the White House about this?
I suppose there's definitely a certain amount of argument going on. We know that Navarro is pushing for something tougher. I mean, he almost said himself that he wanted something tougher than what seemed to be on the table. But he was careful to say it was all up to President Trump. But, I mean, I think the thing is, what's different this time is that what people are arguing about are not these sort of big conceptual issues, but really very, very detailed aspects of concession or not concession.
Like what, do you think?
Specifically, will some tariffs be rolled back, and will there be some kind of indication that this is the beginning of a more comprehensive tariff rollback? Because I think the thing is, this is essentially what the Chinese need to take back to their constituency. They need to say, well, phase one, we've made some big concessions, we're going to start buying agricultural products, but, we got something, we got a roadmap to tariff removal. Now, maybe that will all fall apart, but at least we can say, hey, we did it. And conversely, I think Trump needs to say, hey, we got something. We're not just going back to the status quo ante. I mean, after all, if China buys agricultural products, well, China was buying agricultural products before this all started. So Trump has to be able to say, they're buying agricultural products again, and we got something else.
I'm hearing something like the Chinese are now selling things at extraordinarily low prices internationally. Have you heard that? Is that a move as far as an offense against the U.S., or is that just for survival?
I think it's a little bit in between, but I would say this is basically the operation of market forces. I mean, China is suffering a significant amount of pain from U.S. actions, and as they try to maneuver around them, of course they encourage business with other parties, and so that means selling things cheaper, and it also means making some concessions to investors from foreign countries, right? I mean, there's already a big wedge, for instance, in how the automobile companies are treated. Mercedes and BMW are treated a lot better than General Motors and Ford right now. And, you know, so I think quite a bit of that is natural. So in other words, I guess if I had to choose between the two polls that you put up there, I'd choose the second, that this is basically, it's not a strategic offense against the United States. It's basically the operation of market forces, but it does show that China, you know, is suffering some significant economic hurt.
That's Barry Naughton, chair of the Chinese and International Affairs at Graduate School of International Relations and Pacific Studies at the University of California in San Diego, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The ex-Secretary of State James Baker says the rise of authoritarianism is the greatest threat to democracy. Foreign businesses have expressed mixed views toward China's import expo in Shanghai. The Kashmiri conflict is continuing to depress tourism there. And strange creatures on a Danish beach turn out to be art, not a space invasion. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, today is Veterans Day in the United States, a day that is set aside to show gratitude and appreciation for those who have served the country in the armed service. Just 25 years ago, women were not allowed to fly battle planes and operate tanks. Yet, despite generations of physical and cultural obstacles, women have been drawn to the military. Lulia Larmolenko met with a World War II veteran who found a way to make her military dream come true when it seemed impossible. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Libby Haynes is 92. Planes have been her passion for over 75 years. When her mother gave her $10 as a birthday gift for her 17th birthday, Haynes knew what to do.
And had a flying lesson. I spent $6 to rent a Piper Cub for an hour, $3 for the instructor for an hour, and $1 for the logbook.
In 1945, young Libby had already finished a training course of the Civil Air Patrol Cadet Program and became a nurse. But after the Second World War, she decided to head back into the sky.
Then I just had a very, very strong calling. It's the only name I can put to it, that I was meant to join the Air Force. I don't know whether you say divine guidance or what, but it was the best decision I ever made in my life.
The U.S. Army did not enlist women until 1970s, and Haynes became an aerographer. At the same time, she flew with the Civil Air Patrol and managed to buy her own tiny plane that she used to fly home for the weekend.
And I still had a student license when I bought this P-51 PT-23 surplus for $500, which was 2 months' salary.
Her job brought Haynes more than just professional satisfaction. It is there that she met her husband, a pilot. But when she got pregnant, one of her colleagues reported to the senior officers. Haynes got discharged. But it wasn't anything personal, explains Marilla Cushman from the Women in Military Service for America Memorial.
There was a time where if you had children, if you became pregnant, whether you were married or not, you had to get out of the military.
Cushman joined the military in the 70s, but was also unable to do what she really wanted to.
I was disappointed that I couldn't do more, that I couldn't do some of those other things that the guys were doing.
In mid-1970s, the rules changed and women were allowed to pilot non-combat planes. After the Gulf War of 1990-1991, that limitation was gone too. Cushman believes the U.S. Army simply realized it needed women.
Particularly during the global war on terror, we started bringing women, attaching them to infantry units and special forces units, because as these units went into, as we were in Afghanistan and Iraq, because of the cultural issues, it just became clear that we couldn't manage without women across the board.
Today, women in the U.S. military make up 14% of the personnel. But it took years of fighting to get to that point.
Let the generations know that women in uniform also guaranteed their freedom. That our resolve was just as great as the brave men who stood among us.
Both women say they're happy to see the position women in the U.S. military enjoy today. Though Haynes confesses she never really took any limitations seriously. For Yulia Yermolenko in Washington, D.C., Anna Rice, VOA News.
And you're listening to International Edition. Back in a minute.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. The first successful organ transplant surgery was performed back in 1954 in Boston, Massachusetts, and since then, millions of such operations have been done. Yet, despite the revolution in this sphere of medicine, a challenge remains on how to get the new organ to the patient fast enough. A New York City company called Blade may have the answer to the limited time doctors have to do these intensive procedures. Helicopters that serve as air taxis to deliver very precious cargo to donor recipients in minutes. Anna Nelson has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
The company Blade used to be a high-end helicopter taxi service, but recently they've also moved into the business of saving lives. Blade helicopters are delivering organs to patients as part of the MediMobility program.
We had the equipment that was available and dedicated to us. We have the dedicated infrastructure at all three New York City heliports, and we have 24/7 coverage in terms of our flyer relations and operations team. So we had all the pieces of the puzzle to do something like this.
Delivering organ transplants is a race against time. Before now, when an organ became available, doctors had to drive to the nearest airport, fly to neighboring cities, then drive again to get to the patient. And all this had to be done in 4 hours. That's the time limit on the viability of an organ.
From the moment that we
cut off the blood supply to the heart in order to transport it to our recipient center, that period of time is what's known as ischemic time. Basically time where the heart is not receiving any blood or oxygen, and on some small scale, the cells are beginning to die.
NYU Langone Health, where Dr. Carrillo works, was the first to test the MediMobile program. And it was an instant success, cutting the travel time from 4 to 2 hours.
When we get off the helicopter, we unload the cooler. Thankfully, it's right across the street.
Before MediMobile, doctors would sometimes turn down available organs because they knew they couldn't get there in time. Nathan Alexander is head of rotorcraft operations at Blade, and ever since the company started the program, he has been working practically 24/7, coordinating the flights to save lives.
The organs are actually en route at the moment, directly to East 34th Street. We'll have an ambulance standing by upon landing to bring the crew over to Langone, and that will help expedite the transfer process.
Inside the Blade office, all flights carrying donor organs are highlighted in red and have priority over others.
Even just watching the doctors get off the helicopters, it's just sort of moving like, wow, the burden of what we're doing and how much of an impact it has, that there's someone at NYU waiting to receive that organ and it's going to allow them to continue to live, which is, I think, remarkable.
If the experiment keeps working efficiently and effectively, Blade hopes to start working with more clinics over time. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M.
Lady Gaga recently sat down for a long interview with Oprah Winfrey and revealed some very personal issues, including her years of insecurity, post-traumatic stress from being raped, and other battles related to mental health issues that led to bad behaviors, as she says. Gaga's been a longtime champion of emotional well-being and says she used to feel her performances needed to always be of shock value, but has now realized that her celebrity platform brings responsibility to humanity and the mission of spreading the importance of kindness that heals all things. Lady Gaga has also been an advocate for the LGBT community.
My mom and I always say, tell me, don't show me, because I struggled with that. And I've actually not opened up very much about this, but I will to you because you have a very giant following and I think it's an important thing for people to know and hear. But I've been a cutter for a long time. And the only way that I was able to stop cutting and self-harming myself was to realize that what I was doing is I was trying to show people that I was in pain instead of telling them that I was in pain and asking for help. And when the switch went off for me in my head that the cutting did not make me feel better. You feel better for 2 seconds, and then you feel worse about yourself. When I realized that telling someone, hey, I'm having an urge to hurt myself, it's masochism, self-masochism. I'm having an urge to hurt myself. That diffused the urge. And then I didn't feel that I needed to show because I had someone next to me that's saying, you don't have to show me. Just tell me, what are you feeling right now?
You've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but we thank you for joining us. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Whether you're broke or evergreen, your black, white, beige, chola, descent, your Lebanese, your Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast for leader tease, rejoice and love yourself today, cause baby, you were born this way. No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, chola, or I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave. Come here, fall in my way.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
During the American Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln called on his countrymen in his famous Gettysburg Address to ensure that liberty shall not perish from the earth. His words have inspired many over the years, including millions in our nation's armed services, who fought to preserve not only America's freedom, but that of other nations as well. Today, Veterans Day, America pauses to honor these men and women and the values of duty and sacrifice they represent. Long after they leave uniform, they symbolize what it means to be a citizen of a free land. The holiday, observed every year on November 11th, originated with the armistice that ended the First World War in 1918. The conflict, fought in Asia, Africa, scattered islands in the Pacific and the waters off South America, as well as on the battlefields of Europe, was seen as the war to end all wars. But other wars followed, and in 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower expanded the holiday to honor all who have served in uniform, both in war and peace. Our government continues this effort to this day with programs to help veterans leaving the military to find employment and ease their transition into civilian life. At its core, though, Veterans Day isn't about war. It commemorates no battlefield victory or defeat. It celebrates no advancement of political or territorial ambition. Rather, it's a day of remembrance, echoing similar holidays in Great Britain, Canada, South Africa, and other nations that honor military veterans for their service and sacrifice.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.